Welcome to At the Organ.
Hi, welcome to At the Organ. I'm Brent Johnson, and with me today is Christopher Sower. Christopher is an organ technician and builder, and he's here to talk about some of the tasks that organ technicians go through. Thank you for giving us some of your very busy time.
Oh, thank you.
Now, this is a very busy time, so we're a week and a little more before Easter. What is an organ technician doing this time of year?
It is definitely time to do touch-up tuning. Still a little cold because Easter's a little early, but we go through and we take care of stray reeds and a couple of sagging caps and stoppers that have fallen because of the changes in humidity and for the most part, we're not doing full tunings yet, at least another month or two.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. You wrote an article that was published in this month's American Organist magazine about just tips for the organist of what a technician does and what you can avoid and what sort of problems you run into. First of all, you recommend a couple of resources for organists that want to learn more about organ building. The first is The Contemporary American Organ by William H. Barnes, which is a book that's been around a very long time. Tell us a little bit about that.
There's many copies of the Barnes book, and in fact, there's a lot of jokes about there's many copies of the Barnes book. You can tell his changes of opinion if you read the different copies. But I think it's a very good resource for individuals who are wanting to learn more about the technical aspects of an instrument. And in particular, he goes into details like what makes a molar a molar, what makes a Kilgan, and what makes a Wix a Wix. And you know, if you have an instrument and you don't know a lot about it, there's a good chance that in the Barnes book that you're going to find something that appeals or kind of zeroes in on your specific instrument.
And you do service a lot of different kinds. I mean, within those three builders you mentioned, even though they're mostly not building organs anymore, their instruments are still around, and we still have to deal with different technologies from different parts of the century.
Very true. They were probably some of the more prolific builders, and so at least in the Midwest, there are a ton of Kilgans and a ton of Wix instruments in pretty much every Catholic church, and Moeller was very prominent with over 11,000 instruments, so chances are pretty good that you're going to run across those in this area.
We'll link to where you can purchase that book for yourself off of our website at theorgan.com. You also mentioned the Encyclopedia of Organ Stops, which we'll link to. Tell us about that resource.
That's a wonderful book. And also there is a website that covers the dictionary. It'll take a stop name, one that you might not be familiar with, and it'll give you references of other possible names, and then also the pipe construction and shape, so you're able to look at a set of pipes and identify it. And then also sometimes it'll give you audio examples on the website. But the book that is referenced is a great thing to have at your side if you're going to be concertizing or maybe visiting another church and you're maybe not sure what they're going to have as far as stops available. And it's actually a good book to read through anyway if you have an instrument that you play on often and you just don't rightly know what the construction of the instrument is.
Now, you mentioned three specific problems that organists usually run into with their instruments. We'll start with the first one, which is the cipher. What is a cipher?
Oh, yes. So the cipher is what gives me the most business. That's where a pipe is stuck in the on position, or maybe it's multiple pipes are in the on position. And so you'll have either what we call a weeping cipher, where it's just barely playing, or you'll have a full-on cipher where the note is fully playing as if it was having the key held on. And there's many reasons why a pipe or a note will be ciphering, but it's definitely no noticeable, and it's annoying because unless you can just play in that key for the rest of the day or the rest of the month, you'll have to have a technician come in and pull that pipe or maybe fix the problem at hand.
Now, there are a couple even pieces of music where composers have written around stuck notes. I can think of Johann Aland and Percy Grainger wrote music for ciphers. What are common causes? Why would a pipe organ cipher?
Well, a lot of times we run into issues in consoles or in relays because of debris. There are contacts in the back of keys for electro-pneumatic and electric-mechanical instruments, and the debris will get on the contacts and basically make a bridge between the different contacts and cause the pipe to act as if it's in the on position, or cause the valve to be in the on position. And that'll come sometimes from vermin, having mice, various different bugs, often relays are in the basement or in a tucked away place. But then also, if there's construction in a church, there's a lot of times that dust and debris will get in. But my favorite is, of course, in consoles, where people will have their paper clips on a music rack, and then they'll fall in between the keys and act as a nice metal bridge between one contact and another.
So sometimes a problem can be something back in the guts of the organ, or it can be right there at the keys.
It's very true.
Even a physical problem. Now, some people would say, well, tracker organs never do this. Is that true?
No. That is definitely not the truth. Tracker organs actually can have equal calamity when it comes to paper clips, because it'll get wedged between the keys, and then you'll have two keys sticking down, and so you'll have two ciphers. Or sometimes you'll have it to where the mechanics will bind, and they'll be stuck in the on position. And sometimes the linkage between the key and the valve will have lost its leather nut or its securing device, and it'll be stuck in the on position.
Now, in your article, you suggest when there's a cipher, call the technician and stay away from the organ, because it's not always for everyone to get inside the instrument. But if I'm somewhere and I've got a concert coming up, what would you recommend to me if I called you on the phone and said, help, I've got a really loud cipher, and if I can just make it go away, everything will be great?
Yes. The best thing to do in that situation, of course, is not to touch the instrument. But when you are in that situation and you have to do something, we recommend being very careful on entry, because there are many places where there's ladders and places to fall. So you want to walk lightly, not wear anything like organ shoes where they're slippery, and get into the place, listen for that cipher, try to identify before you get into the instrument what division it's in, so that way you're going directly to the problem instead of passing through maybe two or three or four divisions, potentially touching other pipes and bumping into things that will cost time and energy and money later on. But then also, you want to focus on where the sound is coming from and try to just blow little puffs of air over the area that you think the sound is coming from, and you want to listen to hear if the pitch changes, or if maybe the pipe kind of flickers a little bit in its sound.
So if I blow at the pipe sort of in the direction of the mouths, that'll actually change the sound of the playing pipe.
Exactly.
So you can find it without sticking your hands down there.
Exactly. The best thing to do is not to touch any of the other pipes. So you want to try to go right for the pipe that's ciphering. Another thing you can do is to keep your hand about an inch away from the top of the pipe and listen for the pitch to change also. So when you've narrowed down the area, you can move your hand over the top of it and then hear the pitch change, and then get closer very slowly to narrow down the fact that is indeed the pipe. And then when you have that opportunity, you can pull the pipe straight up, and you can either put a piece of tape over the toe hole of the pipe and put it back in, which is the safest because the pipe is being protected in that place, or you can take the pipe out and put it in a place that is safe from being stepped on or lost.
So if I turn on the organ and there's a cipher, but I can't tell exactly what the stop is, what's a good way to designate, how to figure out where it is in the organ?
Well, the first thing you want to do, I try to identify what the pitch is. So if you don't have perfect pitch and you can't just identify, oh, well, that's an A, you can try to find what pitch it is either on a stop that's not in the stuck position, or you can use any stop for that matter and find out what pitch it is, and then also try to figure out approximately what pitch range it is. So if it's a low pipe, you're not going to be turning on a 2 foot or a mixture. You're going to be looking for something that's a 16 or an 8 or maybe the base of a 4. But then you want to try to run through every stop until you can find which note is ciphering. So if you identify that it is an A, then you want to go for the lowest A on the keyboard and try each stop until you hear that nothing has changed. And a lot of times, if you actually find that note and then you jiggle the stop, sometimes it will break the debris free from whatever position it's in, and then you'll be able to solve the problem without calling a technician.
So the second problem you mentioned, after the probably slightly less annoying but still a problematic, is when a note doesn't play at all when you want it to play. We call those dead notes. What are some common causes, and what do you do with dead notes?
Well, there are many, many causes for dead notes. Unfortunately, a lot of times dead notes are because of a failing mechanic. If the valve has leather, maybe there's a hole in the leather pouch. If it's a relay, it's a good chance that there's a contact that has been broken off. So a lot of times you'll have dead notes, and then they're kind of indicative of a problem to come. So the dead notes will arrive, and you'll find that you'll need to express them to a technician so that the technician can find them. But the causes for dead notes could be something as simple as a hole in a pouch, or maybe there's dirt in one of the armatures that allows the wind to either pass into the valve or pass out of the valve. There can also be issues where a relay switch has broken, or maybe a wire has broken. So there can be many, many reasons for dead notes.
I'm Brent Johnson, and I'm talking today with organ builder and technician Christopher Soar about common pipe organ problems and how he fixes them. Next, we're going to talk about tuning, but I first want to remind you that At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. Organ Media is a listener-supported organization, and we're approaching the month of April. That's when we turn to our listeners and ask for your financial support. We don't like to interrupt our broadcast and productions with begging for money, so we condense it down to just 1 month. If we can raise our entire operating budget in that time, then we don't have to bother you again any other times of the year. Our biggest expenses are hosting and bandwidth. The disk space containing this audio and the pipes that bring it to you are all rented. After that, it's the servers that create our streaming live broadcasts and allow you to interact with them. And finally, we have to pay for things like the microphone I'm talking into right now and the computer that I'll edit this audio with later. All of those things have been provided by listener contributions. And while we don't need to buy new microphones and computers, we do like to take these things out into the world and bring organ-related content to you. I'll talk more about that later and how you can help support us. But for now, let's get back to Chris Soar. Now, as you mentioned, this is the time of year when a lot of people are getting touch-up tunings for Easter. They want their organ to sound the best. How often does an organ usually get tuned?
Well, that varies also from church to church, place to place, organ to organ. Generally, an organ should be tuned twice a year. Once when the heat comes on in the wintertime, and then again after the air conditioning comes on.
And those are different in different places of the country, too.
So. Yes. And it depends on the facility. A lot of times we wait as long as we possibly can before turning the heat on, and the same thing for the air conditioning. The ambient temperature in the room, of course, affects the instrument.
How so?
Well, the colder the temperature in the room, the lower the pitch will be. And then, of course, conversely, the higher the temperature, the higher the pitch will be, the general pitch. But the problem is that reeds and flues move differently from each other.
I mean, they react to the temperature changes in different ways.
Yes. And so they'll separate. So the hotter it gets from the point of tuning, the more that they'll drift apart. So if you have the organ tuned to be, say, A440 or concert pitch at 72 degrees, then if you have a spike of 5 degrees and it's now 77 degrees in the church, the temperature will have caused the flues to rise in pitch, and it will also have caused the reeds to rise in pitch, but they won't rise at the same rate. And so the same way in the wintertime, if it gets cold in the church, the same thing will happen. The flues will become flat and the reeds will become flat, but they won't go at the same rate.
So that's why when I sit down to play the trumpet voluntary at a wedding in June, when it's really hot in the church, the reed sounds horrible, even though the rest of the organ might be fine.
That's exactly correct.
You mentioned in your article that keeping a constant temperature in a room is very important. And a lot of people ask, how much does temperature affect the organ? And you've mentioned that the pitch change, but is it really important year-round to keep the organ at a constant temperature?
Well, it's important to keep it relative. If you know that the temperature in the room is going to be 68 degrees in the wintertime, it's not imperative to have it 68 degrees in the summertime, but you should have it pretty close. We try to recommend that the temperature in the room should vary no more than 10 degrees one way or the other. So if the organ sounds its best and is tuned at 72 degrees in the summer and 68 in the winter, that's perfectly fine. And that's that constant temperature. But fluctuating during the week because we don't turn the air on or turn the heat on does affect the tuning. But if you give the organ enough time to react after you've turned the air conditioning back on or the heat back on, a day or so or maybe two, it depends on the room, the organ will come back. It never comes back perfect, but it comes back.
Very few churches, I think, can afford to keep their heat on all winter every day if there's not events going on every day for churches that only have Sunday services. And many organs are very vertical, so pipes are higher in the room than other pipes. How much does that affect trying to keep the organ in tune?
That affects it a lot, actually. I was just at a church today where they have a typical A-frame style building, and they run the heat very often because the floor generates a lot of cold air, but all the heat travels to the top of the point of the A, where, just luck should have it, the great division is located. And the swell division is located about 3 feet off of the main floor. So there's a great difference in height between those two. Well, there happens to be a 7-degree difference, which is a lot of pitch change. So the great division, when it's cold outside, gets most of the heat, so it stays at about 72 degrees, but the swell division will be freezing cold at maybe 65 degrees, and so they're not in tune with each other. But when they turn the heat back on and to full blast, then the great division is being cooked at 85 degrees when everyone's nice and toasty warm at 72 degrees. The funny thing is that if your technician is able to recognize this, they'll pitch the swell at the same time that they pitch the grate at the correct temperature. So you'll usually have that when the temperature changes, you'll have the drift upward or downward, and they'll both track with each other.
So when you have an organ that's separated like that, you're generally moving some of the pipes to be in tune with the others. How often do you ever tune every single pipe in the organ?
We avoid at all costs tuning every pipe in the organ. It's best not to touch pipes. They don't like to be touched, in particular when they have tuning slides. You have metals at different compositions, and so they don't want to move at the same rate. And then when you touch them, they free themselves from the position that they were in, and sometimes they slide and move all the way down. Or sometimes they want to free themselves up and vibrate loose or move. So we do our best to listen and not to touch any tuning slides on any pipes, or touch any pipes for that matter, that are in tune. So we're actually listening to the relativity. We're listening to what that pipe sounds like compared to all the rest.
With modern heating and cooling systems, humidity is a factor because especially our forced air systems will dry out the room. How much does that really affect either tuning or just the condition of the organ?
It affects the condition more. And it can affect the tuning, in particular on wood stops. So a stopped flute, a rank that's made out of wood, will be greatly affected if your humidity is rather low, or rather high for that matter. As the wood moves and shrinks, stoppers will move because they are also made of wood, and so they'll then go out of tune. But it's actually a larger problem for the mechanics, in particular for a mechanical or a tracker instrument, because you have wood shrinking, you're changing the distances, you're changing the measurements between places or the locations of holes versus sliders, and so you'll begin to starve wind on instruments. You'll begin to move the key depth on instruments. And we take care of an instrument in Chicago, and it can get down to 10% humidity. And I've seen a board that might be 6 feet long shrink about a half an inch, which is an incredible change of shape. And if you think about that over the length of a tow board, which is the board that pipes sit on, you're actually changing each diameter hole slowly, and small though it might be, it does affect things like the smallest pipes more than it would the largest pipes.
So what's a remedy? How can I prevent my organ from drying out?
Well, the best thing to do is make sure that you have a good relationship with the building and grounds folks at your church, and express to them how important it is to maintain a good level of humidity, or that would be somewhere around 30% to maybe 65 or 70%. We don't really have a choice in the Midwest. Sometimes it goes over that. But the best thing to do is to make sure that there are humidification systems in place. And sometimes those humidification systems can be as simple as your technician making sure that there's a bucket of water in the blower room, which the blower room would allow for the air to be sucked into the organ being humidified instead of being dry. The other things that can be done is humidification monitors can be installed in new HVAC systems. And so if the church is looking to do something to replace the HVAC system, it might be the time to then recommend that a humidification system or at least a monitoring system be put in place so that you can be aware of what is going on. And that'll help you and your technician to be able to solve problems.
Well, while we're down in the blower room, let's talk about that a little bit. What are some tips for making sure that the blower is doing what it's supposed to do in the best way?
Well, the blower has a very important job. It is the lungs. It is the breath of the instrument. The problem comes when the blower is put in a location that is also a good storage unit. And so paper gets sucked into blowers, shredded, and then blown into a entire pipe organ. Or sometimes papers or boxes will be sucked into the intake of the blower, and you'll then basically bog down the motor and cause it to overheat and potentially burn up the blower. The blower is very important to the instrument, and it's the last thing that people look at as being important. The other thing is that your technician needs to know where the blower is and have ease and access to it, because older instruments and older blowers will have to be greased and oiled. A lot of the newer blowers have self-sealing bearings, so that way the blower will constantly be running and be constantly oiled. But the older ones will need to be maintained at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. So keeping any kind of Christmas decorations or old bulletins or maybe sheet music away from the blower and its intake is very important. The other problem that happens frequently is that the static regulator that frequently sits on top of the blower will be piled with Christmas decorations or sometimes boxes of music, and the well-meaning church staff will often use it as a storage place and unfortunately will change the wind pressure for the instrument. So it's very good practice to educate your staff, in particular the maintenance staff, as to what is a part of the organ and what is a place of restriction or off limits.
Answer a question here for us. So when I turn off the organ, where should I leave the swell shoes?
Well, the default is to leave the swell shoes open. The reason for that is that it's a good practice and a good habit to get into to leave the swell shoes open, because on a mechanical instrument or an instrument that might even be electromechanical but has an old-fashioned linkage style swell shoe, that you want to have the shades open. And so if you keep the shoe open and the shades are open, the air, the ambient temperature, the ambient air of the building will pass into the chamber, and the temperatures won't drift as much from chamber to outside space.
But I was once told that that lets dirt into the chamber.
Well, any air is going to bring dirt into the chamber. It's true that it will bring dirt into the chamber. However, it's more important to get fresh air and good temperature into the chamber than to worry about dirt, because it's going to come into the instrument while you're playing.
So if I open up the chamber and there's enough dirt on the walkboard that I can write my name, does the organ need to be cleaned?
Or? Probably. A dust will build up in the pipes and will actually change the pitch. And so it's a good idea to talk with your technician and ask them if it's time to do a judicious cleaning. Sometimes it's as simple as just pulling out a division at a time and cleaning, and something can be as extensive as pulling out the entire organ and cleaning. We take care of a lot of instruments that are pre-1940s. There was a lot of coal being burned in St. Louis all the way up to the early 1950s and even throughout the Midwest, and it was often dirty coal, and dirty coal would leave a film that will build up over time and will actually act almost like an insulator and will cause pipes to become choked and change their timbre and their pitch.
So it's apparent that a good organ technician will solve lots of problems for you and save you from lots of headaches. How do I find a good technician? What are the criteria and what are the steps if I don't know who to call in my area?
Well, there's not a lot of us around that are willing to risk our lives going into pipe organs, but there are quite a few qualified technicians and some great people out there that are capable of taking care of any pipe organ, be it mechanical, electromechanical, or electropneumatic, all throughout the Midwest and even all throughout the United States and even all throughout the world. The best thing to do is actually to find another church that has a pipe organ and talk to the musician and ask them who is their technician and find out whether or not they have a good relationship with that person. Many of my customers call me on Christmas and Easter, and I have no problem with that, and neither does a good technician, because that's what we're here for. But you should have a good enough relationship that you have their personal number or their direct line. And so you need to know that. You need to ask the other musicians whether or not they have that kind of relationship, and then ask them what the quality of tuning is, if they're happy. And then also find out whether or not that person is willing to take on more clients, because a lot of us are very busy to the point where we can't take on any more clients. But the advantage of asking people in your hometown is that technicians will often cut you all a break if you're all in one town, because you're sharing the travel costs, and it sometimes will be beneficial to get the same technician that is servicing other instruments in the town.
Are there any online resources I can turn to help find somebody who's in my area or nearby?
The American Institute of Organ Builders has a very extensive website, and there is a place to search for builders. There are also other ways, of course. You can search via Google and other places and looking for technicians. But my suggestion is, when you're looking online with anything, you do your cross-checking and you find out what the history of that person is. Technicians are really personal with their instruments, and so in turn, you should find out what that person has as a background and as an interest, and whether or not they have a specialty. If you have an instrument that is a Jouget Sinclair, maybe you should call up Jouget Sinclair and ask them whether or not they have a recommendation in your area for a technician. Maybe they're willing to come down themselves. Maybe they're not willing to come down. Or in the case of a Kilgan, where the Kilgan Organ Company is no longer in business, but there were technicians around that have been servicing Kilgans for many, many years and who are the byproducts of the closing of the Kilgan firm. And you could contact those people and you can look for those people. So there's many ways to search online looking for the important parts of your instrument.
Christopher Sower is president of Christopher Sower Pipe Organs in Warrensburg, Missouri. Now, what sort of area do you service if people are interested in having you come look at their instrument?
Well, I take care of instruments mostly in the St. Louis area and about 3 to 4 hours at a circle around there. I've been to Chicago. I take care of a couple of instruments in Chicago. I've been out east into Springfield, Illinois, and as far west as Omaha, Nebraska. And I service for other organ companies when they need help, because sometimes the load gets too heavy for just one firm. But I will travel a pretty far radius if the need is great.
Thank you, Chris, for coming in and talking to us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
If there were any terms today that you didn't understand or would just like to learn more about pipe organ building, we'll link to the book The Contemporary American Organ by William H. Barnes on our website at theorgan.com. It's a great resource for learning about the craft. We'll also link to the American Institute of Organ Builders list of members and to the website The Dictionary of Organ Stops. If you still have some questions about organ service or problems with your own instrument that weren't answered by this episode, please go leave a comment on this show at theorgan.com. Or you can send an email to info@theorgan.com and I'll try and get an answer for you. As I stated earlier, April is approaching, the time when we ask you to support our efforts here at Organ Media. We depend on your help to keep this show up and running. You can support us with a one-time or an automatic monthly donation by going to organ.media and clicking on Donate. Sponsorships begin at just $1. You may have noticed that our show has been on a bit of a hiatus. Well, without a few key volunteer personnel, we haven't been able to keep up our regular production schedule. And we have been working on some more video content for our Organ Media YouTube channel. We'll link to that as well. In producing some of those videos, we do create worthwhile audio content that will show up in our podcast feed, and we are working on a new concept for the show with some local musicians. So I hope you'll hang in there with us. In the meantime, you can always find classical organ music 24 hours a day on our streaming stations, organlive.com, Positively Baroque, and The Organ Experience. All three stations are available on our new iPhone app. Just search for Organ Live in the iTunes Store. And our updated Android app is in development now and will be out very soon. You can also find all of our stations on your Roku device or your television. Just search for Organ Media in the Roku Channel Store. That's all for this episode. If you liked it, please give us a rating in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. Doing so helps us find new listeners, and it encourages us to keep producing new episodes. I'm Brent Johnson. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to At the Organ. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. Send your email to info@attheorgan.com or just go to our website where you can comment on the show. There you can also hear this show again or find back episodes. The address is attheorgan.com. At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening.